Hey, Mugwarts. Welcome to Wormwood and Witches,
a podcast all about the strange and unusual.
Tally
and Erica invite witches and weirdos from all backgrounds to the conversation of the mystic and divine.
Come fly with us on this journey as we explore ritual, magic, and the peculiar.
Hosted by Anchor, you can find us on all of your favorite streaming platforms.
You can also find us on Facebook at Wormwood and Witches Podcast or Instagram at Wormwood and Witches.
Hello.
Hello.
That was all the energy I have.
Welcome to Wormwood and Witches. We're Tally and Erica, and we have zero energy.
It's okay. It's Sunday. It was a good weekend, though. I can't complain. So
yeah, you went skiing. You went Fancy Town.
I know. We did go to Fancy Town. I will say that that's probably my witchy woo is staying in this fancy ass house in Steamboat. When we went to go ski and snowboard with a group of people, and like, I was like, holy shit, these are rich people. Like, it was a townhome that was like near like this like little gondola thing that like would take you to the base of Steamboat Springs, like where the lifts were. Mm-hmm. And there was a hot tub out on the patio.
Right.
And then they...
Oh, so a private hot tub.
A private hot tub already when there's a community heated pool and hot tub.
Nice.
And then there were like these, like all these gorgeous, like large windows that like looked out to the mountains, right? And then, but this is how I knew that they were fancy. I feel... They had one, a heated driveway.
Oh, yeah.
And then they also had this microwave that was like the counter level. And then like it was below it, like, you know, like, so like where drawers normally would be. It's not like microwaves that are like the hood above the stove or anything. Mm-hmm. And you would push a button and like the drawer would open and you would like, it's like a drawer. You like place your cup or whatever you're heating up, like down in it, and then push the close button and it closes and like do
That's
the timer
so
and stuff. It's not like a door. I'm like,
yeah, right.
How the
it's
fuck really do you weird. Use this thing?
Oh my gosh. Like, wow.
Yeah. It was really interesting. And then just so many things about that place. I was just like, I'm kind of a gremlin that's just staying in your space.
That's awesome.
For a weekend. So, but I paid for it. So
yeah.
So I deserved it.
That's right.
So
I've never gone snowboarding in Steamboat.
Really? It's
yeah,
super fun.
Sort of like the crunchy places like Breckenridge and A-Basin and...
I will say Loveland is still probably my favorite out of all the ski places.
Loveland, like I don't go fancy. I went to Vail once, and I'm good. That was,
I mean,
like, a lot of Buffy and Chet's there. Sorry if that's your favorite place, but it was definitely not my vibe at all.
I will say I haven't been to like Vail or Beaver Creek or whatever it is. Like, I haven't been to the fancy places by any means. Like, Steamboat is probably the fanciest, and it's still kind of like not crazy fancy at all. Yeah. Like, and so it's
Copper
just
Mountain,
like,
is my favorite. I love
Copper's Copper. Great.
Yeah, Copper's my favorite.
So
but the last time I went snowboarding, it's been a while, so I can't really even say I go anymore. But
Steamboat's fun. They got a lot of good runs and stuff like that. And it's, have you ever seen the movie Out Cold?
It sounds familiar, maybe.
for everybody who has seen Out Cold, there's a statue at the base of Steamboat where it's like this cowboy that just looks fucking ridiculous, and he's on skis, and it's a, you know, like a bronze statue, and it just reminds me of Out Cold, where it's a snowboarding movie where like this mountain is like getting bought out by like basically a Vail resorts or whatever.
Yeah,
and so they're like, Bull Mountain, don't go changing.
Yeah.
So
yeah. I love Strawberry Hot Springs. So when I go, that's what I do, but I've never been in Steamboat during like ski season. So yeah.
It's so pretty.
Strawberry Hot Springs and
Strawberries is great.
Yeah, I love it there.
We did a soak there on Thursday, so
good.
It was very interesting getting up on that road when it's just completely snow and ice.
Yeah, that's
not my favorite thing.
No. Yeah, you gotta earn your keep going there.
Yeah.
What are you drinking? Anything fancy?
No, just a LaCroix.
Oh, okay.
I'm just a basic bitch.
Yeah.
So, what you got?
Sparkling water. Again, it's that same. It's like the sparkling water with some lemon, and this is an elderberry and cherry juice, I think.
Ooh, where'd you get that?
King Soopers. It's like their immune juice. Got Ooh. Elderberry, cherry, and something else. I can't remember.
Nice. Dan can use that right now. He's
under the weather.
Sick. So
Tom and I went out on a impromptu date on Friday. We weren't really dressed for it. It ended up being kind of a fancy place. But they let us in anyway. and the food was really great. It was super fun just to get out and do that. And we weren't planning on it, so which made it even nicer. But it was like, hey, I'm going to have a glass of wine since I haven't been drinking. And and then, of course, you know, Tom's like, damn it. Of course, she's going to have a glass of wine in this fancy ass restaurant. It's going to cost more money. And of course, I have more than one. I have two glasses of red wine. And
this was Friday night?
Yeah, I didn't feel well the next day.
Oh, no. Is this what life is going to be like, that we can't actually go back now?
That's why I'm not, because I was thinking like, well, I'll crack open some wine because I don't have to talk tonight. But I was like, I wasn't like a full blown hangover, but I felt sluggish and I didn't really want to do anything all day. And that sucks because it was nice out and
it was like 50 degrees out today and like, sunny is nuts.
I just wanted to lay down and nap, even though it was really bizarre. And I've been working out and stuff. And so to me, I'm so thirsty after that. It's like, okay, we already live in a dehydrated state just sitting here. And so now I'm sweating and working out, and the last thing I want to do is put alcohol in my body. So now I'm just like, am I ever going to drink again? So
I think we will. It's just
so, but just like, you know, now, which is, it's good. It's a good reset because I could throw back a bottle or two easy.
Yeah.
And so now this is like, oh, two glasses. I didn't like how I felt the next day.
So maybe it's just a glass.
Yeah. So I'm like, maybe I just have a glass and I sip on it like a normal person and not an alcoholic lush like I have been in the past. So I don't know. I mean, it's good. My body doesn't need it right now. So maybe in the summer when it's nicer out and we want those wine slushies.
Yeah.
In my neighborhood, then what is it, barrels and bottles? Yeah, like then we might change our minds, but right now it's like, I don't know.
Right now it's just been like, I don't know, I've been on a big tea kick, so
yeah, me too. Yeah, lots of tea.
Maybe it's just more about body intuitiveness of just paying attention to the, like, your body really doesn't want it right now, and that's okay. So
I have been craving a lot of sugar, and I can't remember if we talked about that last time.
We have talked about your cookies.
Yeah, like I can't stop with the cookies. And now it's Girl Scout season, Girl Scout cookie season, and I am
hell yeah
all about it. Our neighbors brought home boxes of it, and Tom and I were like, "Where did you get those?"
You're like, "I smell Girl Scout cookies in the air."
Yeah, but I don't know. I guess that's kind of my witchy woo to just stay on track and find some Girl Scout cookies and
hell yeah.
Buying like a big ass humidifier for the house has been great
too. Ooh.
Yeah.
Was there a reason why you decided to get a humidifier?
We've had one in the past and just gotten some cheap ones and they don't last. And then it's like, okay, I'm filling up, you know, garbage and stuff. So I got a big one for the living room and a smaller size one for the bedroom. And it's just, I feel like I can breathe.
Yeah.
So just because it's so dry. So that's been super helpful.
I'm curious just in the sense, because I'm like, no matter how much water and other stuff I drink, like, I'm just never hydrated enough, apparently.
No.
What the fuck? And I'm not even drinking alcohol at this point, so what the fuck?
Yeah.
So
I think it's been helpful.
Maybe I'll have to give it a go.
Yeah.
So.
Do it. Makes your skin all nice.
I will say that I do enjoy that about our swamp cooler when it gets turned on during the summer.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Feels kind of nice. So. But I guess talking about alcohol and poison to our bodies and continuing, I feel like our last episode, I was bouncing between a few ideas and it kind of just like was able to be like, okay, we'll talk about this one. So we're going to continue with our poison themed, although I don't have a fun title like you did, but we're going to be talking about poison rings tonight. So
poison rings. I used to own one.
Me too. Maybe that's why we're friends. We're just like two femme fatales, like poisoning people left and right. Not really.
Oh, that could be our title.
Femme fatale. I think that's how you say it. I don't know. I'm not French, so.
I would say.
So.
Femme fatal.
So pull them out. Don't go change it. Anyways. So. Caveat to this too is that so the desktop computer went on the fritz a while ago, so I've been using my laptop that's ancient while we record these episodes. Mm-hmm. And last weekend or whatever it was, maybe last week, it decided to finally crap out. So my husband, thankfully, got the desktop computer kind of booted up and going. But this means also that I've been doing research on my phone and like trying to bounce between multiple pages of like, you know, like information. And I've had to go to like my old school, middle school days of actually writing down notes. So hopefully we'll be able to read my notes. I have really shitty handwriting. Oh, so, yeah. But yeah, so I'll just pre-apologize if I stumble on any of my things where I'm like trying to like figure out what the fuck I was trying to say. So,
thanks.
But yeah, so you had a poison ring. What did your poison ring look like?
Well, it was silver and it had, I don't know, some sort of embellishments on the side, like probably fake rubies.
Mm-hmm.
And something embossed on it. I don't quite remember because it was a long time ago. I was at least in high school, probably.
Yeah.
Early 90s.
Early 90s.
I wonder if I still have it somewhere in a bag of trinkets from my high school days. But it would, yeah, and then it would like flip up, but I didn't, I never put anything in it.
Yeah, me neither. Mine had, I think, was like an amethyst or fake purple stone on top that looked like a little box and like, yeah, like filigree on the side and stuff like that. I remember getting it from the Gem and Mineral Show because Tucson has like the biggest gem and mineral show.
I don't even know how I got mine.
I'll have to look to see if I also have mine because I'm really curious if it's like, yeah, like in a box of randomness
feel like it
somewhere.
Throw away a ring. So it's probably in some bag of stuff. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, so poison rings.
I'm excited.
I guess they date back like pretty far. And I mean, I was trying to find the evidence of what they were saying as far as like going back to India and stuff like that. But one of the earliest accounts is that of Pliny the Elder. So 23 to 79 Common Era, written down in his accounts, is talking about Roman government officials. That basically, like, I feel like fucking Russian spies decided to have these rings on them that to avoid torture, that they could just poison. They're like arsenic pills, right? Like they could just poison themselves. So that way they could just avoid being interrogated or tortured and stuff like that. So. And also, sorry if you can hear my pages turning in the back, but maybe that's cool ASMR. I don't know.
I like it.
It sounds like we're in the old timey days. So, and they have a few different names too, I should say. They are also referred to as pillboxes, compartments, lockets, or vessel rings. I think they have come in like locket form too, but rings have been like the most popular in the past. Originally, I feel that maybe that this is like an archaeological, like if we put on our archaeologist caps on, that they're thought to have held relics such as like saints. So they're kind of like amulets and stuff like that. Or if you get into kind of like, it's even like predating the weird Edwardian days, but back to the Middle Ages, they would do relics of like hair and teeth in there. So like kind of like, yeah, like apparently like, I feel like good luck charms, right? Like they're just like, let me keep this in my locket and like carry it around and stuff like that. So I don't know. I'm trying to decide if I'd rather have like see like poison in the ring or be more upset if there's like a tooth of some sort or some hair in there.
For some reason, hair and teeth feel very darker, like a lot darker than actual poison that can kill someone.
I know. They're not some of my favorite things. That's for sure.
I'm like, whoa, poison? All right, but hair and teeth, you went way too far.
Yeah. Well, and there is, I guess, some jewelry that's called mourning. Like, I'm so sad somebody died. Like, mourning. Not like, good morning. Mourning jewelry of where people would have, like, notes or, like, pictures within, like, the rings or the lockets and stuff like that as well. So.
That makes sense.
There is a category of mourning jewelry of where then they would also maybe put the hair of somebody because people are fucking weird and want to keep like pieces of people when they pass on. But I get it. So, but during the Renaissance period, the aristocracy also used it for cologne and again would hold hair or portraits of their loved ones, so kind of that precursor to the mourning jewelry that's in there. And then I thought it was kind of cool there, so I will say I thought there was going to be like a lot more information about poison rings and like poison vessels, because I originally wanted to like look at like different types of like how would people like, you know, like Aqua Tofana, like hit it, like they hit it in like the cosmetic packages and stuff like that. Like, what were the secretive ways that you could like hide poison and decide to poison people? And there's archaeological evidence of poison rings, but there's not a whole lot of like insane history that I thought would have been like connected to it. So, but as we were talking about femme fatales, Lucrezia Borgia, who was born in 1480, she died in 1519. She was the daughter of one of Pope Alexander VI, I believe. There's no evidence, like hard evidence, that she actually poisoned anybody. But it is like kind of like she's gone down in history, like with all the rumors with the Borgia family, because like her brother died and like there's like a lot of like mysterious deaths of like high up people and stuff like that, that like were connected to the Borgia family in Italy, that like they're like, wow, so and so died of very like mysterious circumstances. I wonder what happened. Because she has this whole history of like getting married and then getting divorced and having an illegitimate child and then marrying for money and like wealth and power, et cetera, because that's families were like nuclear. So, you know, her dad, you know, Pope Alexander VI wanted to have more power. So they did that via their daughters and stuff like that. So arranged marriages and stuff like that. But anyways, so supposedly there were accounts of her having those, the poison ring or poison locket on her. And I think that's probably how rumors floated, along with the fact that men or people mysteriously died involved with that family. But what I did find interesting is that if you pour in Italy like a glass of wine and you're like the back of your hand is facing down as if like you had like a ring on your finger so that you could like slip somebody poison, this is called, and I'm not even going to try and pronounce the Italian way of saying it, traitor's way of pouring, because it's like indicated that like you would be able to like poison somebody with the poison ring and stuff like that. So you don't like pour wine a specific way with the back of your hand facing downwards. So I was just like, huh, that's kind of interesting.
Wait, you're pouring the wine or you're holding the wine glass?
You're pouring the wine, but like if you were pouring it like with the back of your hand, like so you could like slip something into the wine glass, like you like, right? Because like you like just open the top of,
and it would just go the ring into the wine glass as you're pouring it. I see
that. Yeah, which I mean, so it's interesting, some of the poison rings that I had seen, because I was looking at just like different versions, not all of them just have that box at the top too, like some of them are like, there was a really cool glass one that was like completely kind of like hollow on the inside and then looked like it had like, I don't know, like a little pearl or something like at the top that you could like unscrew, and then like the glass was almost like a little, like it was in a ring shape, right? But like a little tiny vial that you could drop some poison in, or if you had cologne, I guess, and didn't want to smell stinky, could just dab some on your behind your ears, right? So and then I also found it interesting that during the reign of Louis XIV, there was the affair of the poisons, where basically somebody got caught, but basically there were all these mysterious deaths happening within the aristocracy, like high up and stuff like that, like, you know, powerful people just randomly just kicking it. And so I guess 367 orders went out or were issued to start investigating these well-off people who were assumed to have poisoned somebody. And of that, 218 were actually like served and carried out. And of those, 36 were actually executed for actually, I guess, charged with poisoning and killing somebody for power reasons and whatnot. So like, yeah, during 36 were actually executed. Oh. So 367 orders went out, but 218, I believe, of those were actually like served to individuals. So still a very small percentage of rich folk probably getting the guillotine, but
yeah.
But yeah, so with the rise of poison rings during these times, people would have what they called royal tasters.
Yes. And,
yeah. So they're just like, gotta make sure my shit's not poisoned, right? So
what a horrible job to have.
I know. They're just like, eat this, you may die. And you're like, say what?
Yeah.
But Roman Emperor Claudius in 54 AD was apparently still poisoned, even though he had a royal taster, which I thought was kind of funny. I'm just like, poor dude was probably so paranoid from eating his, I don't even know what they ate, but we'll just call it like his morning waffles. He still fucking ate it. So figuratively speaking, he actually ate it, but then he kicked the bucket at the end. So, and then Margot Volk, I believe is how maybe you say your last name, was also the person who tested Hitler's food, and she would eat his meal or taste test his meal at 8 a.m. every single morning to see if he was getting poisoned by any of his council or not. So, and I, like, as I was reading this, like, I hadn't gotten to the bottom of this article yet, but I was just like, what about Vladimir Putin? Like, he seems like he's like definitely on the anxious side and stuff like that.
And I'm sure he has one.
And it came up like at the end of the article before I even got to the bottom of the article. It's like, I was like, does Vladimir, like, at the top of my notes, I'm like, does Vladimir Putin have one? And it's like, yes, yes, he does. Like, there's like an error.
He absolutely does. Of course he does. I mean, there's people currently that are just mysteriously, they shot themselves in the stomach 5 times. It's like, no, they didn't do that to themselves.
Yeah.
And he's like the king of poisoning.
And then I put it at the bottom of my notes about that. I was like, Trump definitely had one, in my opinion. While he's eating his shitty steak or whatever. Oh my God.
Don Jr., taste this to make sure I'm not poisoned.
Ivanka, right? Like, oh my God. So, and then, but archaeologically speaking, the oldest surviving poison ring that they found is from the 14th century and was actually found in Bulgaria. And it was discovered in 2013. And the archaeologists thought that it belonged to, I don't even know how to say this Bulgarian dude's name, Davrotitsa. I don't know. Titsa. I'm like, the fact that you have tits in your name, man.
Mr. Tits.
Mr. Tit. We'll just call him Mr. Tit. He was a wealthy dude, and he had a lot of feuds with surrounding people in his area, along with his son. And so they thought that maybe it belonged to him and that he may have like potentially have poisoned people, but they have like no archaeological evidence of this at all. But they thought that it might have belonged to him. So And then I also thought it was interesting that much like, you know, okay, we have our poison rings, but like, what about being the poisonee and not the poisoner? Like, so like, yeah. What do you do? And so I guess a lot of people would also try to counteract poison rings and like poison jewelry in this sense, or attempts by having rings with different types of sigils or stones in them. Like, so there's like one with like a scorpion. It's thought to say that like you wouldn't be poisoned if you had this like type of ring on you, like with this sigil, this like this, and they're like poison rings but with like with the scorpion on the front and stuff like that. And so I'm like, I don't think any rocks or any stones are gonna keep you from being poisoned,
it
my friend.
That like, way. I'm sure
maybe toxic universal elements, but otherwise, yeah. I don't think it's gonna help you in any way. But yeah, I was kind of surprised that there wasn't like, for some reason, I totally thought that there would have been like this like wealth of information on like various types of like poison rings, poison lockets, like poison bottles, like, you know, like sneaky ways of trying to poison slip people. Something to yeah. somebody. But like, surprisingly, well, I should say when I went on the internet, it was a great disappointment in that. So maybe I need to do a deeper dive. There is like, I do want to check out this book that I found reference to, but I did not like, I didn't have time to actually like check it out from the library or anything like that. What's her name? But she does like, she has a whole book on, it's by Diana Scarsbrick. And it's, her book is called Rings, Jewelry of Power, Love, and Loyalty. But she talks about poison rings, apparently.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm like, I kind of want to check out that book to see if there's anything that maybe I've missed. But, so what did these poison rings most commonly hold?
Arsenic.
Bingo. What is the history of arsenic and stuff like that? So it's not a deep dive, but it's a scratching the surface of the history of arsenic. But the history of arsenic is, so like you had mentioned last week that like water hemlock, right, is like super poisonous. It's related to, is it, I think it's related to the carrot family. So the Grecians usually used water hemlock, but in the Roman Empire and Renaissance and Middle Ages is when like arsenic came to rise, because they started to find out that, hey, this shit naturally occurs in the earth, and it comes in like crystalline form. Notes, or there's evidence of somebody having it. It goes as far back as the 4th century BC at the earliest, but it's mostly accredited to this German dude named Albertus Magnus, who in 1250 is the dude who discovered arsenic. So, but they think that the Roman Empire and like, yeah, throughout the Renaissance and Middle Ages, they've definitely been using it. So,
yeah, that's what killed Socrates.
Yeah. So, and I kind of want to like look and do some more research on Paracelsus, who was a physician alchemist and is named as the father of toxicology in the Middle Ages. I think I'm like, who's this dude?
Yeah.
I want to know more about that. But
I bet he had a poison taster.
Probably. So I didn't realize that, like, yeah, like arsenic will mimic food, like your food poisoning effects. So you're just like, yeah, like not going to feel good. But then later accounts that I read about like these whoever's been like poisoned by arsenic heavily, like they have like bulging eyeballs and stuff like that. And I was like, I don't think that that's like, I don't, when I get food poisoning, I just usually have things coming out at both ends and then sweats and everything. I'm pretty sure, I would hope that my eyes aren't bulging and whatnot, because that would be very frightening.
I think that's after just continuous poisoning. You know, you're slowly being poisoned. And yeah, that's probably an effect of it.
Either that, or it's like you've been so heavily dosed and your body goes in like ultimate shock.
Yeah.
And you just start to react horribly. But I also didn't realize that the lethal dose is the size of a pea. So it's like,
whoa,
like literally like
that's nothing.
Half it at like not even probably a teaspoon worth, like, right? Like
that could definitely like fit inside a poison ring.
Yeah. I'm like really curious if anybody has ever done like trace analysis, like on any of these poison rings, like swabbed them and tried to see if there's like any like arsenic or cologne or whatever else in there.
That would be really cool.
Yeah, that I feel like that
part
like
of the job.
So
figure out.
And then so arsenic was a really good way to poison people until 1836 when a
like not that long ago. So for like the last how many 600 years or something, they're using arsenic to poison people. And because even today, I mean, I'm assuming that's how modern people are being poisoned as well. Again,
yeah,
even you, Russia, but that's wild. 18 and then like
and then in 1836. Wow. It's just like, I feel like it's really sad when we come to these conclusions that we're like, oh, like this happened so long ago. And then like, when you really think about human history, you're like, no, like the 1800s really weren't that long ago.
Think. Yeah.
Because it's like odorless, tasteless for the most part, even though like sometimes like we talk about like, yeah, like the smell of almonds or something, but like,
but why? I mean, it obviously it works. Why reinvent the wheel when this is a tried and true way to poison someone?
Kill somebody.
Yeah, so. I mean, don't change it up, you're doing just fine.
Don't go change a bull mountain. But James Marsh is, I think he was a, I think he was a British chemist, found a way to finally detect arsenic, like in.
Rat bastard.
Yeah, I know. Selling everybody else out. Fucking bullshit. They're like, thanks, man. And then I started to try and like look at other podcasts, like just to see what they found about poison rings, which was mostly what I found out and have told. But I discovered something called the Philadelphia Poison Ring, which I was like, what the fuck is this? And I, my notes are now on the computer. But so basically it's these two cousins who let's see if I can move this over here. So there's two cousins, there's Herman and Paul Petrillo, in the 1930s, who lived in Philadelphia, and they began this like murder ring operation, whatever you want to call it. But they were part of like an Italian gang. And one of them, Herman, was an expert counterfeiter and arsonist. And Paul ran an insurance like fraud business, apparently from the back of his this tailor shop, which is kind of funny. But they basically, Paul, they started to prey on like women who, much like Aqua Tofana and a certain, like, oh my gosh. So much like the whole Aqua Tofana thing, they preyed on women who, I guess prey is kind of like a harsh term, but anyways, they relied on women who were in shitty situations, shitty marriages and stuff like that. And they're like, hey, like, take out this insurance policy and like, we can also help you get money and get rid of, like, get rid of your husband. It's a win-win. And so basically the whole ring of this was that like a bunch of guys mysteriously started to die in the 30s in Philadelphia under suspicious circumstances, right?
Yeah.
And so they would end up swindling the women out of the money and stuff like that. But amongst being like, I feel like what we consider, you know, the godfather and stuff like that, of like normal mob ways of killing people, which is usually beating the shit out of people. They also used arsenic to poison a lot of them.
Wow.
So they ended up poisoning this one guy, which his name was Fernando Alfonsi, and he ended up going to the National Stomach Hospital, I guess, which existed in Philadelphia. I'm like, that's very specific, I feel like.
Yeah.
And they did an autopsy. He was the guy that, like, it describes to, like, his eyes bulging and stuff like that. So they take him, he goes to this hospital, and he dies, and they do an autopsy, and they find out that he has, like, a large amount of arsenic, like, levels, I guess, probably in his blood or whatever, like, his organs and stuff like that. So, in the end, these two guys, along with some other people within the ring, end up getting caught, and then they go to the electric chair, actually, I think in the early 40s and stuff like that. So, but yeah, there's like this whole like Philadelphia poison ring where they just like try to swindle people out of insurance money and stuff like that after killing them, like, and swindling the families out of money. So I thought that was kind of interesting that even in the 30s, somehow that they, again, like, you're like, even though in, what, 1836, you can still figure out that somebody died of arsenic.
Right.
There's still mob bosses.
Right.
Totally willing to go and moiety people. So, but yeah. So that's mostly what I have for tonight. It's nice and short. So, mostly because I thought there was going to be more on poison rings. I need to check out the book to see if there's more, but
yeah, I'm surprised there isn't.
I know. I was just like, how is there not? How's this the only piece of jewelry and maybe some lockets? Like, I mean, when you think about like fun Russian spies, they've got like the, like when you see the movies and stuff like that, they have like the, they have like the tooth caps and stuff like that. So it's just like,
I don't know.
But I guess that's to poison yourself necessarily, like not to poison other people.
Yeah.
So
interesting.
But yeah, it's kind of short and sweet tonight. So hopefully not sweet like arsenic, smelling like almonds.
Now I want to know more.
Well, but now like,
there isn't anything to know.
Well, now I'm like, feel like maybe we should, since we're on this poison and arsenic realm planet, maybe we do a dive into the Victorian cosmetic products.
I definitely want to talk about that at some point, maybe next time.
Yeah, we'll see what floats our fancy. So that's usually how we decide what the next episode is going to be. So,
and ignore our list.
Yeah. So
we'll get to
it. Well, yeah. It was kind of a interesting little like beginner's guide, Cliff's Notes version of going into poison rings and arsenic.
I mean, that's what our whole show is about, the Cliff Note version.
The Cliff, we're like, here's the 30 seconds that you need. So
until next time,
keep gazing into the unknown.